OWC Radio number 3 with an interview with Bob Levitis. And that beautiful music must mean it's time for OWC Radio 2.0, episode number 3. I'm Tim Robertson. And, you know, guys, the last two times I did the show, I opened solo and then I brought in the interview segment. It's flipping it around this time. This time we're doing the interview conversation part first, and then I'll do the, the solo part second. But the important thing is, right at the top of the show, we've got our guest. And if you're looking at the show notes, you already know that's Dr. Mac Bob Levitis. Hello, Bob.
Hey, how are you, Tim?
I'm well. We've known each other for probably, 12, 13 years?
For as long as I can remember.
So you live in Austin, Texas, correct?
I do indeed, and it's beautiful here today. How is it up there in Michigan?
It's rainy today, but at least it's not cold. We've probably had the worst winter that I can remember, and that even goes back to 78 when we had a huge blizzard here. But the difference is, in the blizzard, you get everything at once. This last winter, it was long. It was the whole season snow. It was terrible. So I'm not going to complain about a little rain that we're getting today in almost 60-degree weather. Although that would probably be terrible for you.
No, I think it's in the 80s here today.
Oh, shut up.
I haven't been outside yet, but yeah.
So you are in Austin, Texas. This is obviously OWC Radio, Other World Computing. They opened up a new office in Austin, Texas.
Yes, I raided it the other day.
Yeah? How was that?
It was fun. They have a pool table.
Give us some details. People that buy OWC products, they buy them because, good price, excellently made. We just love the products. But that doesn't really... What's the company like?
I like the dancing girls in the lobby. And no, I'm kidding. When I was there, there were only a few people. It was lunchtime, so there were only a few people at their desks, and it looked like... you ever walk into a room full of coders?
Yes, I have.
Well, it kind of looked like that. It was very quiet, and the only sound was the sound of keyboards typing. So I'm guessing they were coding or maybe, doing email support. I think these guys are all on the design side. But it's right on Lake Austin, or it's now called Lady Bird Lake. They changed the name a couple years ago. Us old-timers, we can't get used to it.
Lady Bird Lake?
Yeah.
Like after the...
Johnson.
Oh, yes, yeah. Johnson.
Yeah.
I almost said FDR. I don't know why, and I knew that wasn't...
Lady Bird Johnson is like... I think she might have been sainted in Texas because she's revered.
Yeah.
She's got a wildflower center, and she's got a...
Well, she was a great first lady, too.
She was cool. Yeah. She was totally cool. We used to go out to the LBJ Ranch every once in a while, which is maybe an hour from here. And every once in a while, you'd drive through. They allowed you to drive through and just look. And she'd be out. She'd walk out on the porch and wave.
That's cool.
Right.
You don't see that nowadays.
No. You don't expect people to let you get close to them and wave at you and stuff.
Well, I have seen...
through the whole ranch, and you could see all the longhorns and everything. It was great.
It's different now, that's for sure.
Those were the old days. Yeah. Austin now has the worst traffic in America.
Does it really?
Oh, yeah, and it's overrun with hipsters, and prices have gone up. I'm leaving. I'm moving to somewhere else.
I saw your Facebook update on that one day. You were thinking about leaving.
I am. I think next year we will leave Austin because it's gotten to be a big city. It's like we came here from Los Angeles, and we had 25 years here, and in the beginning it was awesome. I could get downtown in 20 minutes no matter what. At rush hour, it was really, and it's a great town. There's great food, great people, great weather. There's a lot about it that's great. But it's gotten too crowded for me,
Well, so that's the problem. Wherever you go, see, it wasn't cool 25 years ago. Then you moved there, it became cool, Bob. Wherever you go next is going to, see.
I'm not going to live long enough for it to matter.
You're the common denominator, though.
I hope not. I'm moving to the country. I'm moving to the mountains. I'm moving to Colorado.
Really?
Yeah, the Boulder.
So you're going to go from L.A. to Austin, and then you're going to, for your twilight years, you're going to freeze to death in Colorado.
I'm not saying I'm going to stay there forever. I mean, when I get old and my blood gets really thin, I might move somewhere warmer. I might become a snowbird. But I like Colorado. I went up there. My daughter bought a house up there.
Beautiful area.
I've been up a couple times in the winter. And you know what? It's not like Chicago winter. It's different. It comes and goes. And when it goes, the weather's nice and the air is clear and the sky is blue. In Chicago, it's like 5 months of gray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And always cold. It's like I would go to school and my mom would say, I'd say, is it cold out? She'd go, of course it is. It's February.
It's February. Know? Of course it's cold.
Yeah. Yep. Like I should know that. But it was very cold.
I posted on, I'm going to say Twitter, getting ready to do my interview with Dr. Mack. And someone said, who's Dr. Mack? And I said, Bob Labaitis. And they said, why do they call him Dr. Mack? Now, I know why they call you Dr. Mack, but people listening to the show may not. Where did the Dr. Mack
I had nothing to do with it. My first book, I was editing magazine in like 1980-something, and a publisher invited me to submit a proposal for a book. They liked my writing in the magazine and thought I could do a book-length work, and I thought, this is great. If this works, I don't ever have to go back to advertising. Oh, boy. So I proposed a book called How to Become a Macintosh Power User. And that's what I was into at the time. You know, I was doing ResEdit hacks, and I was using FontDAMover to, you know, move resources around. And I thought, there's definitely a book for people like me. You know, somebody else wants to know how to do this. And at the time, there was no internet. You know, you had to go to your user group with your 400K floppy disks to get any of this stuff happening. The shareware library.
Or BBS.
BBS, yeah, I could do that, but most people wouldn't.
True.
So it was just, I don't know.
And so
but I digress.
Yeah,
I
so mean, where did the name come from? You got the book deal.
Oh, okay. So the book, they changed the title to Dr. Mack. I forgot. That's the punchline is they didn't like my title, How to Become a Mac Power User. They said power user is like a poison word.
Really?
You know, yeah, and I said, but it's the right word for this book. And they said, well, we'll use it in the subtitle maybe. And they didn't. They called it Dr. Mack, and the subtitle was Tips, Tricks, and Techniques for Mastering Your Macintosh.
So you were way ahead of the curve then.
Which I said, okay, well, you know, Dr. Mack really does have a kind of a nice ring to it. I'm not that I had any choice, but I said, well, that'll work.
No, it's a good moniker. I mean, it stuck all these years later. It's 30 years later, and you're still using it. And it's appropriate, too, because, quite honestly, I don't know too many people who know more about the Mac, not just the history, but what's currently going on, than you. I mean, sure, there's developers and stuff like that, but when it comes to everyday usage, something's going on with my Mac, you're the person I know that people turn to you, and you always have an answer for them.
Well, not always, but
you try.
You know, the thing is, I'm just insatiable when it comes to why did that happen? How do I make that not happen? Or what app do I need to accomplish this task? You know, what will help me do this? And so, I spend a lot of my free time just kind of looking at stuff to write about. You know,
new material.
Yeah, well, and everything that I do, I just got a new computer, a new monitor, and that's just given me tons to write about because I've got all new ports now. I've got, you know, I've got to juggle the way everything is connected. It's a laptop, and my old computer was a desktop, so I've lost the whole syncing thing and leaving with the MacBook Pro with not the right stuff on it or forgetting a presentation or not having my music with me or whatever. I now only have one computer, and it's a laptop, and that's been a revelation because I thought I needed a Mac Pro.
I got away from that a few years ago myself. I made that transition, and one of the topics I wanted to hit on for this episode of OWC Radio was being a road warrior, but before we get there, I have to say this year, you know, everybody about 2 months ago celebrated the 30th anniversary of the Macintosh for like 1 week, and then it just kind of dropped off the radar. Well, I'm trying to keep that going a little bit because I think it's more than a 1 day or a 1 week appreciation of this platform. So I keep talking about it here because to me it's very important. So
there's
going to
be a video soon, by the way, from the 30th anniversary party.
The one that happened at Cupertino?
Yes.
Owen Rubin was telling me about that, and his name's up there. He's one of my writers from another website, and he was really impressed that they still got his name up there, even though he worked there way back in the 80s. And he said it was amazing, and he was surprised that there was nothing online when it came to video. So you're saying that there's going to be.
Oh, yeah, the video was shot on, I think, 5 cameras by Gabriel Franklin. And he says it's essentially done, but he's got some, I guess, some finishing things to put on it. But it should be, I think when it comes out, it'll be on iTunes and probably other places.
It's something that I'm definitely going to want to take a look at.
It's absolutely worth watching. The panels were so good. And you know, our band played, the Macworld All-Star Band. We opened for the Apple Geeks. And it was just such an honor to have been invited to, you know, play a few songs and warm up the crowd for Bill Atkinson and Andy Hertzfeld, all these guys that like created the Mac, basically.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
these are the guys that invented
they did.
The thing.
Yeah. Now, do you think that this celebration would have happened the way it happened if Steve Jobs was still with us?
Absolutely, because Apple didn't really get involved or support it or anything. So it was Gabriel wanted to do it. He thought it shouldn't, the occasion shouldn't pass without some sort of recognition. And, you know, I think he was absolutely right. And he just put the whole thing together to honor these guys. And he's a documentary filmmaker, so, you know, and to shoot a video of reminiscences because it was fascinating. These guys were great. And wait till you see the stuff from Steve Hayden at the ad agency.
Yeah.
This session was like, it went over by about 15 minutes.
And from Chit Day?
Yeah, Chit Day. He was the creative director on all of the big things, including 1984 and Think Different. And I mean, he was around. He was like a vice president, and he was the guy that, like, he was probably the top dog on the Apple account for most of the time. And he had video of all these. You know, he showed the Lemmings commercial, which, you know, isn't nearly as famous as the 1984.
It's a better commercial, though.
It's more interesting, and it's certainly meaner-spirited.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was
as mean-spirited as 1984 was, calling IBM the Borg and, you know, the machine, you know. I think the Lemmings one made people who use PCs look even worse than the first one.
Well, they're jumping, they're falling off a cliff. I mean,
yes, they were following each other off a cliff like lemmings.
Yes.
It was a great commercial.
It was.
But,
very dark, too. It wasn't like a beach cliff. This was like a nightmarish, dark,
dystopian future Hunger Games cliff.
Well, yeah. It didn't work for Apple, though.
I liked it when they were a little more edgy. Now they're kind of predictable. Their new ad for all the stuff you can do with your video camera, you know, it's a really good ad, and it does exactly what it's supposed to do. It makes you, you know, want to get one and go out and make movies with it. But they've done these before, you know.
It's here's the difference, Bob.
Edgy.
Back in the day, back in the 80s,
and
the 90s,
they didn't have more money than 70% of the nations in the world.
But that's not what it is.
That's not why.
No, it's not. It's because now they're a commodity company. They make a commodity product, and before they made a specialized product for a specialty market. Computers were a specialty market, man, for the first 20 years. It was only the hardcore geeky guys like you and me that would actually buy them, upgrade them.
That is true.
But now it's a commodity.
I didn't have a computer before the Mac.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about. Let's talk about that.
I'm never going to learn to use a computer. Why would I? I can hire people to do that for me. I was like an ad guy, you know? Mm-hmm. I wrote copy on a typewriter.
So it's the 80s. It's 30 years ago. The Mac comes out. When was young Bob buying his first computer? Now, you just said it was a Mac. So what was that first Mac?
1987. It was 1986. It was a Mac Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And I took the Mac 512 for a test drive, and I was going to buy one. I knew I was buying one, and my wife was in on it. I said, honey, we got to have this. I'm not sure why yet, but I'm telling you we have to have one. And then I heard that they were coming out with one with, you know, twice as much memory and better floppy disk drive. And I waited until the Plus came out, and I ordered one and waited a couple of weeks, I think, and got it. And it was $2,500, and it had this little 9-inch monochrome screen.
Crazy.
And I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved it because it did desktop publishing because, you know, I had PageMaker and I had a guy next door with a laser printer.
Oh, that was a very high end.
It was, yeah, they were $7,000. So, yeah. You know, charge me 50 cents a page to print, but I could go do stuff like takeout menus for the Chinese restaurants in the neighborhood. I'd go in and their menus would be pure garbage. Mm-hmm. I mean, the worst, with typos and words that you couldn't even recognize and you know, things that didn't align, and they just looked terrible. And I thought, you know what? Even if the food's terrible, the menu makes me not want to order. I mean, look at that. Anybody that cares that little about their menu must not care. So I'd go in with a redone menu for them. You know, I'd take home their takeout menu and just type everything again. And align it right and make it, you know, neat. And I'm not a designer, but I'm good. I know enough about type to be dangerous. So, you know, it wasn't very hard to do better than Chinese restaurant menu.
Right. That was probably MacWrite you were using?
No, I was using PageMaker. And I had like
clip art. Aldis?
Yeah, I had clip art that I would use for the menus. You know, I had some collection of, you know, like Asian clip art with dragons and stuff.
Sure.
And I could do a really nice menu and print it on the PostScript laser printer and give them a 50-cent sheet of paper and charge them $100.
Were they blown away?
Yeah. They were. I mean, they were tickled because they paid somebody else 25 or 50 bucks to do it horribly. So, you know, it was like I'd invest the time. And then after I had done a couple, I would just bring ones I had done in and say, look, before and after, you want me to do that for you? No problem. And that was the first way I made any money with the Mac.
What was the first thing you did when you got the machine home? You plugged it in, you turned it on.
I bought a game from Infocom.
Yep.
And it came with a bunch of stuff like in the package, the physical clues that were part of this text-based game. And I played that until I couldn't stand it anymore. Then I started writing, and I bought a typing program.
Yeah.
Because I already was...
One-finger hunt and peck?
Well, I was typing on a typewriter, but I had never really done any touch typing. Yeah. You know, I was a four-finger and thumbs typist. Pretty fast, but not great. And I thought it's time to learn to touch type. So I got Mavis Beacon teaches typing, I think.
I remember that.
Like Tutor Pro or something. And it was like a game, you know. You'd shoot balloons with the keys. And I learned to type. And now I'm a respectable typist. I type about maybe 60 words a minute. I type enough words that I can't get used to dictation because it seems slower to me.
I was going to say, you know, there's a lot of people who are really into, the Dragon Dictate and those type of programs. I don't know if I could ever write by simply speaking at my computer.
It's,
I know,
hard.
David Pogue, that's the way he does it. But no.
Different brain set to think that way and to speak the punctuation. And I try it all the time. I have it installed. You know what I use it for? If I'm feeling lazy and I want to like lean back in the chair, I'll use it for answering emails or answering texts or writing something on a website rather than hit the keyboard.
Because
it's pretty good. It's actually the version 4 that's out now is good enough that it's the first version I haven't uninstalled within a month. Now I try them, I write a review, and I go, well, I really wanted this to work because it would be very nice not to have to type. but it's never even been close for me. It's
what about like, on iOS, on an iPhone or an iPad?
It's a lot on iOS because it's way more convenient than typing on that.
I can't type on that very quickly at all.
Me either, and I use voice input for almost everything. Like when I send texts, I almost always dictate them.
Yeah, the Siri?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll say, send a text to my wife. I'm running late. Call you later.
Well, let me get your opinion of this. Jump ahead. It's now 2007. I know you were there because I saw you in the audience that day. We're sitting there in San Francisco watching Steve Jobs walk out. And it's the first time we see the iPhone. Did you think, sitting in that audience that day, that the iPhone would be what it is today?
Kinda.
Yeah?
Kinda, only because I had, maybe the year before, gotten a Motorola StarTAC, which was the state-of-the-art before the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a $1,000 phone. And it didn't do anything. I mean, it had a browser,
but
it was
terrible.
The most horrible. I never used it. I would never, ever check my email with it. I would never use its web browser. But it was the smallest phone ever anybody ever saw. You know, it was that to me, I didn't pay for it. I traded stuff for it. I would not pay $1,000 for a phone, I don't think. But I have to say, the iPhone blew me away, and I thought, well, this redefines the way we think of phones. And that was before apps.
Yes.
And then the apps came along, and it's like, well, not only does this change the way, you know, we define a smartphone, but this is it. This is, it's like pretty soon I won't need a Mac.
That was kind of my fear too.
I'll plug this thing into something at home. I mean, what I carry around in my hand will be powerful enough that I can come home and drop it in a slot and put it on the TV with a keyboard in my lap, and everything will work.
What do you think that's still a viable option?
Because half the data is, absolutely, half of the data is already in the cloud, and people are comfortable putting it there. So, you know, if you're not having to lug around a huge data store with every device, well, yeah. You know, the thing is, I don't know that for a lot of people, there'll ever be a way to not have a personal computer of some sort.
Because
there's
just
so many things. Yeah, there's so many things that are just that much. But imagine this. If your iPhone or iPad had the same kind of processing power as today's Macs, had enough storage to get you by with enough cloud storage for anything else, and worked with, like, wherever you went. You could use it with a TV and a keyboard
in
your lap.
It
basically was a brain, and it carried, you know, the essential data it needed to keep itself alive, and everything else was reachable by cell, which here in the United States, if you've got an unlimited data plan, isn't a big deal. If I could have that, I'd have everything everywhere.
Because
cell coverage in my city is 100%, even at my house. So I think that could happen, and I think we're going towards get your data somewhere where all of your devices can access it, and then, you know, kind of the next logical step is screw having all these smart devices. Have one smart device and a bunch of dumb terminal displays and keyboards and mice and input devices.
It's interesting because, you know, all the rumors – for the last few years is an actual Apple TV. I don't mean the Apple TV we have
TV
now.
TV set?
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either.
Though. I've always said I don't see Apple getting into the big glass business. It doesn't make any sense. Mm-mm. It's a commodity business to start with. If they were going to get into it, I would think they would license it to the manufacturers
and
so that they could have a better
software
interface. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could just, you know, they could build Apple TV into a TV set for probably $20 or $25.
Well, when's the last time
Apple sells it for $100? You got to figure if they put all the parts inside a TV, they could do it for $25 and make money at it. So Apple could license that to TV makers. I don't think they want to do that either. I think they want to have a box that
I don't know. When's the last time
you
had to adjust?
You pay Apple.
When's the last time you got into your TV menus and thought, "Wow, this is very intuitive"? Or when's the last time you used your cable box and thought, this is great, this is fantastic, this is absolutely the way we should be going through channels and setting recordings and stuff? It's terrible.
No, the only device that's even close is the Apple TV. And I can use the Apple TV with voice.
Yep. What do you think of the Fire TV?
I haven't seen one in person yet. My understanding is, for me, other than the fact that it's got Amazon Prime on it, why bother? You know, it's like I got everything else it does. And I, you know, I
Can you access any of your own content through that device? Because with an Apple TV, I can.
And not only that, the thing about the Apple TV that makes it so great is mirroring your iPhone or iPad or having anybody that visits you do that.
Yep.
When people pull out their iPhone and start showing me pictures, I go, give me your phone for a second. I touch a couple buttons, and pretty soon they're looking at it on the 60-inch TV going,
it's magic.
Oh, how'd you do that?
Right, it's magic.
I said, yeah, all you need is a $99 box, baby. I don't know why everybody doesn't have an Apple TV. It's crazy.
It's an impulse buy at $99, isn't it?
No, I think so. Well, and I like it so well, all our TVs have one.
Same here. In fact, I've got the first generation Apple TV. That one was much larger with a hard drive. I still have it. It's not hooked up to anything.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything that had the right connectors. It only had RGB and the other kind of analog.
RCA. Yeah.
RCA connectors. There was no digital connection whatsoever.
Nope.
And it didn't support high def.
No, but the nice thing is, well, it did support high def if you connected it with the RGB cables to a TV that had high def through that port. And I actually had, at the time, a Samsung, so I was getting a better picture through the Apple TV than most people were. But it kind of paved the way to what we have now. And now with the Fire TV out there, I got to imagine Apple's got something really spectacular coming, and it has to do with video games. I mean, if you look on the app stores for both the Mac App Store and the iOS App Store, games are right at the top of the best sellers. Apple is not going to continuously ignore that, are they?
No, I don't think so. And, you know, this whole freemium thing, some of these freemium games are raking in millions.
Yeah.
And you know, if they do it right, it's really not offensive. Like we were talking before the show about Real Racing 3.
Right.
That's a great example of a freemium game done right, because I've only spent $10 total.
And if you're really enjoying it, you would have spent that anyways.
I would have bought the game for $10 before, and I bought the last one, which was $6.99 and didn't have in-game purchases. Now, I'll tell you, I kind of like it, because I know if I get stuck, I can always buy a Ferrari. You know, I can always pay real money to buy a Ferrari.
You know, Bob, we can't all
kick
just
everybody's
we can't all buy ourselves out of problems, Bob.
No, but in this game you can, and I kind of like that. I mean, when it's done responsibly. Like I play Zynga Poker. I've never given them any real money, and I have 11 million play dollars. But I like that other people can. Because it means they don't run out and leave the tables. There's always lots of competition.
But it has been done obnoxiously in quite a few games.
Oh, yeah, but those games last about 1 minute on my device. I look at them, and as soon as they nag me, like one time too many, I make them dance, and I press their little X, and I bid them a fond adieu.
So I was talking about being a road warrior earlier. A lot of what you do isn't in Austin. It's across the United States. I've seen you in Chicago. I know you're heading up the East Coast here in a week or so. By the time this show actually comes out, you will be on the East Coast going through that. So what's going on there? What do you do first? And then let's get into the road warrior stuff.
Well, next week, actually week after next, which will be next week, to those of you listening in radio land.
Correct.
I'm going to be in Philadelphia, Princeton, and Hershey, Pennsylvania. The week of the, I've got my calendar right here. So
you're shopping for Amish goods? What are you doing there?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've gone
to Amish makes some great stuff.
I've shopped in the Amish country after visiting Philly a couple times on this tour, but I don't think this time. I think we might go to the Harley Davidson factory again.
Ooh, nice.
I like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Excuse me for 1 second. Sorry. So that's on the 10th, and then on the 13th, I believe, 12th or 13th, I'm in Princeton, and the 14th is Hershey. and I've got a really big shoe this year.
Yeah. So what are you doing there? Who are you?
I'm visiting the user group in each of those cities, the Mac user group or Apple user group.
There's still user groups out there, Bob?
There's a few. You know, since the internet came along, the main thing people went to the user groups for kind of went away.
Yeah.
You don't need to go share your user group library, your library of shareware and freeware.
Or to get help with a problem that you just can't figure out.
Yeah, there's just all of the things that we went to user group meetings for in the 80s.
In the 90s.
Maybe into the 90s. You can get online now instantly. And so user groups have had to, I believe, either change with the times or go extinct.
Mm-hmm.
And most of them went extinct. Because the truth is, you can't charge people money for that. If all you're going to do is answer questions and offer shareware, well, you know, I can get that at home for free. And I can get more of it than you'll ever have at a user group. They have to find something else, another reason to exist, and another reason to attract like-minded people. And the ones that are the most successful, I've found, are the ones that offer a social component.
Well, I can tell you that when you come to town for a Mac user group, it's a big deal to that user group. The Chicago Mac user group was customers of ours when I was running an Apple specialist there. And I know exactly when you were coming in because that's what they were talking about quite a bit. So it's a big deal when you're going into those places.
Well, and I love going. I don't charge money for these. You know, I do these gratis. They pay my expenses. I mean, I'm not crazy.
Right, you're not losing money.
Yeah, but I don't charge anything. And, you know, I do a good 90 minutes, 2 hours if they'll let me. And, you know, I talk about stuff that I know user group members will be interested in. Talk about, you know, cool stuff for your Apple devices. That's kind of all I do anymore is find cool stuff for Apple devices and then talk about it or write about it.
Well, you said now that you're migrating away from the desktop and you're going to a laptop. Which laptop
to
begin with?
I bought a MacBook Pro. It's done. Bought a MacBook Pro 15-inch with an i7 16 gigs of RAM and a 1 terabyte SSD. And it's awesome. It's the best Mac I've ever had. And, you know, I gave up my old Mac was a Mac Pro. So it's been a learning experience, you know, getting along with so few ports and different ports. But overall, I'm thrilled. I bought a monoprice 27-inch display that I review in my column this week. Next week.
You have to explain who the column is for and where people can find it.
The column is for the Houston Chronicle, and they can't find it anywhere because there's a paywall.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah, so I'm working on a fix for that, but I don't have one yet. So
will they let you repurpose your columns there for
other
places?
Yes, they will. No, it's not will they let me. It's that our deal is first North American serial rights, so I can repurpose the columns after midnight on Tuesday when they publish. So I'm just trying to find the right place to get them the most exposure, you know, for free. I don't want people to have to pay to see my column. That's silly.
Well, you know,
I could just put them on my own website too,
sure.
But I think I can find someone that'll pay me a little bit to host them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it's value. I've read your columns in the past. I don't remember ever paying for that.
No, they used to be free. The paywall went up like this year.
Okay.
And so, you know, I have trouble promoting my column. And, you know, I don't post links to it on Facebook or Twitter anymore. And that's why. I don't even know if I've told my friends and followers that. But, you know, why post a link that's going to tell you you got to pay if you want to read it?
You know, the thing is, I understand people need to be paid. The publishing companies need to be paid. The newspapers, the staff that works there, and you. But I don't know if putting up a barrier
If you understand the fundamental shift in media that's occurred in the past 20 years,
yeah.
You understand that the way to do it is to make the website profitable.
Yep.
You know, to draw the eyeballs to the website, and you do not do that by charging, only letting people who pay. And I am sure, I don't have their numbers, but I am sure that their penetration for the site is way, way down.
Look, I live in a small town, Small town, you know, less than 100,000 people. And the local newspaper will let you have access to a certain number of articles before they throw up a roadblock, say, you want to read anymore, you have to subscribe, you have to pay.
Yeah, this one has no flex. Yeah. It's the first time you look, they tell you you got to pay.
Yeah, they're losing readers left and right.
Oh, yeah, and it's awful. If your business and their model website is now an expense.
Right.
Well, their website, instead of, you know, transforming it into, you know, if you have good content, people will come.
Yeah.
If you build it, people will come. You'll get eyeballs, and eyeballs translate into advertising dollars, period.
Yep.
And so, you know, a media company ought to be able to figure out how to make those eyeballs pay.
Well, look, you do great writing. You bring a lot of value to your readers.
And then they hide it from 1 million people.
That doesn't
make
sense.
And you know that nobody that doesn't live in Houston, if you don't live in Houston, you're certainly not going to be paying for
access. No, there's
access.
A zero.
I mean, unless 0.0% you're a former Houstonian.
Right.
Yeah, I know. It's like I can't get behind it. I can't promote it. I can't hand out a URL. I write a column and somebody asks where they can read it. I have to tell them I'll send it to you.
Yeah.
I'll send you my version. You know, I mean, I don't even know most of the time what runs. I don't see my edited version. I don't have a comp subscription at home.
Really? They don't even give you that?
Well, they don't deliver to, they don't do home delivery to Austin.
Ah.
They used to, and I used to get it. Only on Tuesday, which is the day my column ran, but they don't even have that anymore. They discontinued all carrier delivery to Austin.
So
I could go to the newsstand and buy it on Tuesdays, but you know what?
Yeah.
It's just not worth it. What I've done is I've waited until I've needed to actually show people physical newspaper columns for something. And then I've ordered reprints of the best columns.
Yeah.
And scanned them, you know? It's like...
There you go.
I don't see my column most weeks. I don't know what I said.
So if
I have
you're
no
going,
idea.
If you're going on the road, now obviously you're bringing your 15-inch MacBook Pro. What are some of the other tools that you use? Because if you're going to be gone for an extended period of time like this sounds like... Look, if you're gone for an afternoon, it's not a big deal, but...
This is only a week, so I travel light, but I am in June going on the Geek Cruise to England and the British Isles and all of the United... You know, all of the Scotland, Wales. Yeah, yep. The whole UK thing. And it's... I think the cruise itself is like 12 days. And then we're staying a couple days early in London. We're staying a couple days after in somewhere, Amsterdam, I think. So you know,
as a Met guy, what are you bringing with you? What's essential?
Everything. What's essential?
What's essential?
My little black bag. Okay, first of all my audio stuff. 2 pair of good headphones, a headphone splitter, extra batteries for my iPhone and iPad.
Are you over the fact that you can't bring an extra battery for your MacBook Pro, or does that still kind of bother
you? No, I don't know, because on the plane most of the time I'm not going to need to use it, and if I need to use it, the 5 or 6 hours I can get out of it is fine.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't have a problem with that yet. I might when I get on a 13-hour international flight and have to work, but maybe they have the outlet and I've got the adapter. The power for airplanes. I carry it. I've only found a couple flights where I could use it, and they were international. But I have one, so if there were a plug. What else do I have? I have a bag full of cables, one of everything, and I have a bag full of adapters, HDMI to mini display port and VGA to mini display port, and I got VGA cables. I have a... I take my Apple TV with me when I travel.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm staying in hotels, I do, because most hotels have Wi-Fi and it's free, and it lets me then watch the movies on my iPhone or iPad. Before I leave, I usually take off all the apps that are taking up space that I don't use and replace them with movies or TV shows that I've recorded. I've got a powered hub. I've got a Apple remote control, which I use when I do keynote slideshows.
And also, if you're plugging into a hotel Wi-Fi, you have to have that. You have to have the physical remote.
Right. And I've got a couple of little pocket Wi-Fi routers. I've got a Wi-Fi hotspot. I've got a little hard disk with, a little 1 terabyte bus powered disk.
I can literally hear you opening up your bag to look in there.
Well, and I've got a 1 terabyte little pocket drive, that bus powered USB drive that's got my iTunes library on it, or most of it, enough to get me by.
Sure.
And I've got now, Western Digital sent me this 4 terabyte RAID, a Thunderbolt RAID. And that's become a big, important piece of my workflow because I've been working on video.
Well, next episode, I'm actually going to be talking about RAID. That's going to be kind of the focus of the next OWC radio, because I think a lot of people don't really get RAID. They don't understand why RAID is a good idea. Why not just buy a big hard drive and call it a day? So we're going to definitely go into
For most people, buying a big hard drive and calling it a day is probably the right idea. But if you need speed, if you're doing audio or video, if you're doing anything that records high definition media
right. To
the disk, you need either a RAID or a SSD. You need a sustained write rate.
Right, yeah.
That's,
you said that
very
right.
High for video. Yeah,
I had to think about that. Did I say that right?
Yeah, for video and stuff, you want to be able to write to the disk. You also want to be able to read from the disk if you're going to try to watch the stuff.
Yep.
It needs to read from the disk pretty quickly. And in the case of stuff like Final Cut Pro, when it's trying to pre-render or show you stuff before it's actually rendered, it's doing all of those things and doing a lot of processing in the background. And I have to say, I'm impressed with the MacBook Pro.
Well, you get the i7, and the i7 is designed for video.
I understand. I got everything as top of the line as Apple sells, because mm-hmm. I'm only doing this once every few years, and I'm doing video, which means I'm putting a lot of demand on my machine.
So you're doing video while you're on the road as well.
I hope to. I mean, I'm doing a TV show, and I'm expecting to have to keep working on video when I travel. I don't know. I've only had this set up 2 weeks. This will be my first.
So it's still new.
Yeah, but I feel really good about it, because even with the 15-inch screen, with the ability to go to Retina size, I can get a lot of work done editing video on just the 15-inch screen.
Well, I could tell you, I was doing a lot of video work for Otherworld Computing back in 2009. They have, as you probably know, all these installation videos. And in 2009, I was the person that was editing those videos and doing some of the voiceovers as well. And I did all of that work on a 15-inch MacBook Pro in 2009. So I have to imagine, even though you've got HD quality, you're going to have no problem.
I'm doing my show at 1280 by 720p.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is there's nothing about it that demands full HD. I could go to 1080, but the file would be twice as big, and I don't think that it would be twice as good an experience to watch.
Right.
I may create 1080 files at some point, but now I'm working in 1280 by 720 or 720p, because it keeps all the media size reasonable. I mean, I can take a 4 terabyte drive and carry around all the assets for 30 minutes of video, a whole episode.
Yeah.
If you.
So, what is the TV show? Where can people find this at?
Well, it's not officially announced yet.
Uh-oh.
I should probably. Well, I mean, I'm getting close enough that I've been talking about it to friends, but there's going to be a big press release, and you'll hear about it when I put it on. But for now, I did create a teaser.
Oh.
And the website is live, although not all the content is there yet. Like, I've got to write a FAQ, but I don't know what the FAQs are until people ask questions. So it's a little bit bare bones. But if you go to boblevitis.tv, you will find the trailer, which kind of gives you a sense of what kind of TV show you might expect from me.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I hope to have the first episode on the internet. Distribution is still up in the air, but for sure I'll put it on YouTube and who knows where else, but it'll become available no matter what, whether I find money or not.
And you're hosting with Squarespace.
Yes.
Well, I like the picture that's out there.
I'm very happy with Squarespace for this project because what I wanted was a turnkey website with very low overhead for me as a webmaster because I'm not a webmaster.
It looks great.
I fight with my website when I try to get it to do things. It's beautiful. And it took not that long to build. And it's the kind of look I wanted. It's like it looks designed.
And, you know, I'm looking at your setup here, and I'm sure it's probably changed a little bit. Because
that's the old setup.
That is the whole setup.
That's the two monitors and the Mac Pro.
You use the newer tech Voyagers just like I do.
Oh, yes. I love them.
Oh, that's one of my I sold so many of those. About them.
Yeah, I said, you know, I don't buy hard disks anymore. I buy raw disks.
Yes, absolutely.
And use them like cartridges. Yep. They're like tape cartridges.
I've got four different backups for my system.
Yeah.
And I just pop out the drive and pop the new one in. It's so convenient.
I've got a set of them, a pair, and I've also got a four bay that I bought at Fry's. It's not OWC, and it's not very good quality, but I found a four bay enclosure for $100, and I thought, you know, that would be even more convenient because most of the time the same disc lives in them.
Yeah, like, for the most part.
Yeah, so, you know, rather than having two and having to get up and change them that often, now I have four that can, like, live in there for weeks on end.
So would it still be one cord coming out to your Mac? A Thunderbolt?
Yeah, it's not Thunderbolt.
No, I'm saying would that make more sense to you to have that as a Thunderbolt?
I don't need it on Thunderbolt. It's just as fast, I think, on USB 3. Yeah, I have to test it because I talked to Larry, the CEO of Otherworld Computing, about, you know, the speed of USB 3 versus Thunderbolt. And he has you should get him on the show to talk
about. Oh, I definitely will.
Yeah, because he really could give you the authoritarian view. But from what I gather, USB 3 is almost as fast, or just, you know, there, it's a wash
in real world situations.
As far as raw throughput for real world work. But he said that the USB implementation is not nearly as stable or robust as the Thunderbolt, and that for doing professional work like video, you probably want to be using Thunderbolt media.
Yeah,
and I get that. You know, I could see that. So I'm glad that he told me that. I can't really, you know, take that out and write about it without more detail, but I understand that. And so the four disks that are in this USB 3 thing, I'm not really using for media. They're all backup disks.
Yeah.
They're all getting stuff written to them every day. And when they get full, I swap them out for a different one. And then a whole bunch of them go to the bank and live in my safe deposit box for a month.
So you got a nice rotation.
Yeah, every month I pull those guys and put new ones out.
Mm-hmm. I was taking them to my office when I wasn't working from home.
Yeah, but since I work for home, I had to find... I did, too. When I worked at Power Computing, I had all my backup disks at work, and then I took backup disks from work home.
Yep, that's exactly the way I was doing it.
They probably didn't know that. And they probably wouldn't have approved, but it was... You know, I'm a bug for backups.
Well, I tell people if your backups are in one location, I don't mean just your hard drive, but if it's in the same house,
then you don't
have backups.
Well, no, if your house is vaporized.
Right.
While you're on vacation. Right. That's it. So an active nature, you know, a hurricane, a tornado, an earthquake, something that wrecks your house. If your computer and all of your backups are in the same place, you got nothing.
Well, that's where the Voyager for me was coming in handy because I didn't want an external that I had to plug in all the time and unplug. This, I just pop the new hard drive in, pop it out, and take it with me.
I couldn't squeeze it out of Larry, but I said, you know, what I really want is a Thunderbolt dock. He did say that the Thunderbolt chipset and implementation are much more expensive than USB 3.
And so I'm willing to pay more if it's better.
I think I am too.
Mac users. Of course we do.
I've only been a Thunderbolt guy for a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure yet, but I think probably I would be willing to pay more because I've always said that those docks, especially the USB 3.0 only for $40, that's a bargain.
Absolutely.
That is a steal. And the four-port one, you know, the one that's got eSATA and FireWire and USB and something else for $79 is a value.
Yep.
So if the Thunderbolt comes out and it's $149, I'm still good with that. I would love to have one on my... And, you know, I've got one, actually, with the FireWire adapter on it. So it's on my Thunderbolt bus, but it doesn't feel like it's the real thing.
No, you know? It's going to default to the slowest common denominator, and that's going to be FireWire.
And one of the things I've noticed is that most storage devices and most Thunderbolt devices don't have pass-through.
No.
They don't have two so that you can attach something else, much less three. The only thing I've ever seen with three was a Mac Pro. And I found that you can't really use a MacBook Pro as a road warrior very efficiently without some sort of dock to plug all your gear into, because it doesn't have enough holes in it.
Yeah. And even worse for the MacBook Air.
Oh, yeah, the MacBook Air for sure. And in fact, I've got four docks, you know, designed for just that, four Thunderbolt docks that I'm testing right now. Because
you like them
everybody.
So far?
I'm going to keep one of them.
Yeah.
You know, there's no question that one of them will win and land a permanent place on my desk. But so far, they've been very similar. You know, the difference is one has a FireWire 800 port, the other one has USB 3, and the other one doesn't. And it's little stuff. But overall, I can't imagine working without one. I'd have to unplug seven things when I left instead of one.
Bob, I want to thank you for coming on this episode of OWC Radio. Believe it or not, we're almost at an hour here, and I still have to do a solo segment here at the end of the show. So we've got to wrap up this part.
And I have to go pick up a wedding present, or my wife is going to kill me. We're going to a wedding tomorrow, and I've procrastinated on picking up the wedding gift until 2 o'clock on
Friday. Do you know what the present's going to be?
She bought it already. It was.
Oh, you just have to go pick it up.
Yeah, it's just sitting there waiting for me to show up and pick it up. But
that's,
you know,
bad, dude.
I've been too busy.
That's bad.
So if I don't go do that pretty soon, I'm going to get killed.
Well, give the listeners some URLs where they can find you at online. Where's your Twitter?
You can't find me at Houston Chronicle.
No. Well, you can if you pay.
Yeah, right, for money. But I don't get any, so I'm not promoting that. Twitter is at Levitus, L-E-V-I-T-U-S. My regular website for consulting and other stuff is boblevitus.com. The TV show is at boblevitus.tv.
Do we know when that's going to go live?
I'd say June or July. I because of this trip to England, it might be July before I get it all put together. I'm really close. I just can't say, because I don't want to pull the trigger until I feel like it's the best I can make it.
Sure.
And every time I watch it, I find a couple things that, you know, I'm glad I didn't let anybody see it yet.
Yeah, we're always our worst critics, though.
Well, I know, and I know I've got to pull the trigger soon, but there's still some stuff that I need to shoot, and there's some stuff that's unedited. So it's a few weeks out, but not too long. I'd say I'm trying to do 23 minutes, which would be a half-hour cable TV show.
Sure.
22 minutes, actually. And I've got 17 finished minutes already.
Wow.
No, I've just got a little bit left that needs some polishing. The 17 finished minutes, when I say finished, I mean I could probably tweak them a little more, but they're basically not rough cuts anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're transitions. They're smooth. There's no jerkiness.
Color correction.
Color and audio has already been tweaked. I could look and see again, but I think I'm happy with all that. Yeah. Plus, this is simple shit. I mean, this simple stuff. It's shot in my office, and it's not very fancy. In fact, a lot of it is shot with iPhones.
You know, the video camera on the iPhone's great. I think for most people, that's probably sufficient for putting something online. I mean, if you wanted to go high-def HBO, well, probably not. But
no, I would use a much better camera. But you know what? I also have a Canon SLR that does video very nicely. You know, it's HD. But it's really too much trouble to work with it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to shoot with three cameras. It's easier to set up two iPhones and a point-and-shoot or a video camera.
Sure.
Is to try to shoot with the, you know, great HD Canon. Plus, it overheats. If you shoot more than, like, You got to buy their pro models, I think, if you want to shoot more than about 10 or 15 minutes straight. Mm,
that's not good.
No, and there's no warning from the front.
It just stops.
Yeah, I finished a segment, and I went over, and it caught the first 9 minutes, and then it overheated. Walked around, it had the overheated warning on the back. You know, I just said, okay, you know, I don't have time for this.
No.
I don't really need the difference in quality.
Well, I filmed something on the iPhone for about a half hour, and I do have to say that iPhone was very, very hot. And that was actually the new one, the 5S.
They get hot, but I've got great little holders for them, so I don't have to. So I take them out of the case.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm using Olaclip lenses usually, and so I want them out of the case anyway. So they dissipate heat much better when they're not in the case.
Yep.
So I have an iPod Touch and an iPhone 5S. And those are my two main cameras. I got a bunch of other cameras. I got a flip video camera that I use sometimes.
Are you also going to share these videos like on Facebook?
Absolutely.
Or are you going to make them go to your website to watch it?
Well, no, they're going to be on YouTube. So
okay.
I will probably, I have to look and see what the specs are for what you can upload to Facebook. But I'll downsample and upload them to Facebook when they're ready.
Cool.
Because I want my friends also to see them. I mean...
Well, you've got 859 friends on Facebook right now, so that's a lot of people that want to watch those videos.
Those people, well, I mean, I would certainly, if nothing else, I'll put a link there.
Sure.
They can go watch them on the website. I think maybe I want to drive them to YouTube, because apparently, if I get enough viewers, they will pay me something.
They will. You'll be rich, and then you can retire.
I don't think that's going to happen.
One episode, he's out. Look at that. He made his millions.
It would be so cool to get a check for doing TV.
Right?
Since all I've gotten so far are bills. A check would be awesome.
Bob, thanks much for coming on.
My company is called Involuntary Auteur Productions.
Oh, okay. That's cool. I like that.
You've got the logo. All right. Well, it's been a pleasure. Let's do it again sometime.
Great. Talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
And once again, I want to thank Bob Levitis for coming on this episode of OWC Radio. You know, Bob's just one of those guys that I really, really enjoy talking to. And if you have a chance to meet Bob in person, go for it. Seriously, he's one of those guys that every time I see him at a Macworld Expo, he always makes me smile. And those type of people, let's be honest, is few and far between. So thanks a lot again, Bob. Really, really appreciate it. One of the topics I was talking to Bob about was being a road warrior, taking your computer with you, your laptop. And to be honest with you, I'm still amazed at how many people are using older Mac laptops. I'm talking about the G4s, the iBooks. When I was working for a Mac specialist in the Chicagoland area, an Apple specialist, every day it seemed like somebody would come in with an older PowerBook G4, an iBook G4 or G3, needing a power adapter. It was crazy. They were still using those old machines. But look, I'm a Mac user. You're probably a Mac user. We kind of grow fond of our machines. And when you got an old machine, it's working great, and you don't need the latest and greatest whiz bang, but you do want to keep it running, and that power adapter goes out, you're going to go buy a new one. We only carried one at the time when I was working at that Apple specialist, because it was the best, and it charged faster than the Apple one, and it was a lot cheaper than buying an Apple one, and it was a better made product, and it was the NewerTek 65 watt AC power adapter. Of course, newer technology is by MacSales.com. It's a great product. If you have an older G4, PowerBook, iBook, or G3 iBook, and your power charger is going bad on you, or it's already bad, this is the replacement you want. It's a great product. And like I said, honestly, it's the only one that we were selling at the time. And I didn't even consider selling another one. This was it. This was the best one to get. But if you got a newer MacBook Pro, and your MagSafe is starting to go bad on you, have you gone to the Apple Store and see how much it's going to cost to replace it? It's crazy. It's way expensive. Well, I know how you can save some money there, too. Go to maxsales.com. I'm going to have a link right in the show notes for episode number 3 directly to the power adapters that you need for your Apple laptops. The prices are better than what you're going to get at Apple. Of course, it's OWC, so you don't have to worry about the guarantee. It's there. If you have any problems at all, they're going to take care of you. And, you know, as a road warrior, power is important. And if you don't have the power, that computer is kind of useless, isn't it? But a lot of times, you know, and Bob was talking about this as well, he does a lot of presentations where he has to plug into projectors. You never know what kind of a plug you're going to need to plug into these different projectors or large screen TVs. So if you need a power, or if you need a display port adapter, maybe you need to go to, I don't know, a display port to HDMI, a display port to DVI, or geez, maybe even VGA if they got a really old one. If you need that and you need cables, this OWC honestly is the only place you want to go. They've got every adapter you could possibly need to get what's displayed on your Mac onto a projector, a big screen TV, a newer model projector, an older model projector. Maybe they got a really old TV that you got to plug into and it's a VGA. How do you get a brand new MacBook Air on that old display? OWC has you covered. And once again, I'm going to put links to all the different displays that they carry, all these, display adapters that they carry, right on the show notes for episode 3. Fantastic products. You know, one of the things that I always had a problem with my older laptops was speed. The hard drives, those little 2.5-inch hard drives, 5,400 RPM speeds, they were just slow. Do you know how much faster your machine, your Mac, can be with an SSD? It's going to blow your mind. They have SSDs, award-winning SSDs, for less than $50 starting price. Less than $50. Look, you spend less than $50 and put an SSD in your laptop, it's going to feel like a brand new machine. It really is. Now, you can get all the way up to a 960 gigabyte SSD. That's amazing. It's blazing fast. All the storage. Look, if you're a road warrior, you're probably not keeping a ton of data on that hard drive, right? And if you need access to a whole lot of data, obviously you want an external hard drive. Now, OWC has both internal hard drives like the SSD and like the conventional hard drives as well. But more importantly, if you have a lot of data, keep it on an external drive. If you don't need it every second that you're plugged in, just plug in that external hard drive when you need your data and boom, there it is. So for internal hard drives, especially SSDs, just I'm serious. If you have a machine that's say a couple years old and it seems to be a little slow for you, I promise you, if you put an SSD in that thing, it's just going to blow you away. And I'm living proof. I did that with my iMac and the speed difference is literally night and day. It was the very best investment I've ever made in an older machine. It's just the speed increase is phenomenal, and I guarantee you're going to be happy. And really, if somebody out there is thinking about doing it, buy the SSD and then send me an email. Let me know your experience, and I'll share it right here on OWC Radio because I think you're really going to be impressed. So go to Otherworld Computing's website at maxsales.com and look up these SSDs, see which one fits in your machine, and they have installation videos. So, you know, not all of us are really high-tech geeks. We're kind of scared to open up our machines. Step-by-step video instructions. You can watch it. You can pause it. Do it yourself. Save some money. Make your machine brand new. I guarantee it. But make sure you go to maxsales.com for all your road warrior needs. If you have a laptop, it's really your one stop on the internet for all your needs. You need to hook up to an old monitor. You need to make sure your power adapter is still working. And if it's getting frayed, check them out. You're going to save a lot more money than if you go to Apple. External hard drives. You need a case. You need a keyboard protector. You need a stand. All your road warrior needs for your laptop can be found at maxsales.com. So with that, we're going to wrap up the show. I hope that you guys enjoy listening to OWC Radio. I'd love to get feedback from you. It's owcradio@maxsales.com. That's the email address to reach out. Next show, episode number 4, I'm going to talk about older Macs again. I did get some feedback from you guys. I would have done it here on this one, but we went a little bit long with Bob on the interview segment. So we're going to carry that over to episode number 4, talking about your old machine. So you still have time to send an email and let me know what your oldest machine was that when you bought it, your very first Mac, I should say, not your oldest machine, your first Mac. Why did you buy it? What was that machine? And do you still have it? I'm kind of amazed when I talk to Mac users and find out how many of us still own that very first Mac. I'll raise my hand. I'm guilty of it. Mine was a Performa 410, and I still own it. I don't know if it still works. I'll be honest. It's actually out in my my tool shed on a shelf. It's dry. But, you know, I actually had given it to somebody else a long, long time ago. And years later, they asked me if I wanted it back because they weren't using it anymore. They bought a new Mac. And I said, sure, I'd love to have that old machine back. But I never actually plugged it in to see if it worked. I don't have a monitor for it. I don't have a keyboard for it. It's just, you know, the CPU. But it was my very first Mac, and I still own it. Or, more appropriately, I own it again. And let's be honest, I could probably buy a Performa 410 on eBay for $5. I mean, it's not a very good computer. It really isn't. The Performa line from Apple weren't the greatest computers, even when they were brand new. But they were affordable, and it was my first Mac, and I'm attached to it. And it's not for sale. It's mine. I love that machine, and it's not going anywhere. And I'd love to hear your stories about your first Mac, because we're passionate about these things, and I'd love to hear your stories, and I'd love to share them right here on OWC Radio. So again, it's owcradio@maxsales.com. That's the feedback. Or you can go to maxsales.com, click the link that says blogs in the upper right-hand corner, and that will take you to the OWC blog page, and that's where we put show notes for each episode. If you don't see it on the main page, click the previous entries, and you will find it, and you can leave a message right there on the blog, and we'll respond to you there, and read it right here on the show if you like. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.